Husbands and wives have a solemn responsibility to love and care for each other and for their children. Children are an heritage of the Lord. Parents have a sacred duty to rear their children in love and righteousness.
We welcome you to Gospel Solutions for Families on the Mormon Channel, brought to you by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I'm Matthew O. Richardson, second counselor in the Sunday School General Presidency, and today we will be talking about friends or foes, helping children and youth deal with their peers. I'm joined today with four very special guests, and I'm really excited to learn from all of you. This is my favorite part, is I get to kind of sit back and listen, learn, take notes, and be edified. So I'm thrilled about this. So I'm going to give you a big welcome, and then I'm going to also have you introduce yourselves as we go along. So today we have Bonnie Oscarson, who is the Young Women's General President. Welcome, Bonnie.
Thank you. It's
nice
fun to be
here.
Well, thank you.
Tell us just a little bit about yourself.
I was called to be the Young Women General President, sustained last April, so I've been in my calling almost a year. I'm a mother and a grandmother. We have 27 grandchildren now, as of this week, and 7 children of our own.
I'm really thrilled about this, having you here today, because you bring a great breadth from your own experiences as a parent and a grandmother, as well as being able to have the opportunity to see what's happening throughout the church in a worldwide experience. So we're so glad you're here.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
We also have with us Cheryl Esplin, who is in the primary general presidency, second counselor. Welcome, Cheryl.
Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about yourself.
I'm here to learn, too. Okay, well, my children are all raised now, but they have children of their own, so I'm a grandmother, and I've got teenage grandchildren that are facing some of the very issues that, you know, we've been studying about, and I hope to learn a lot more how to help them.
I'm excited also because you've had a few things on your mind for the past few years with children, especially
yes,
with primary. And
that's where it really starts. All of the things we talk about today starts right there.
Oh, this is so great. We also have joining us today is Wynn Egan, who's a member of the board for the Young Men General Presidency. So welcome, Wynn.
Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, we have 4 families, a son and 3 daughters, and 2/3 of our grandchildren are in junior high or high school.
Oh, boy.
So the topics that we're going to speak about today are highly relevant to them and to us.
This is great. Do you ever have your children coming saying, Dad, what should I say to my kids? And bringing back the olden days, you know, kind of a thing.
Well, actually, I recall with great fondness when I would take kids when they were in junior high, you know, they didn't have their driver's licenses. They would say, Dad, while we're here, no jokes, no singing, please don't talk.
Just be invisible and we'll be fine, right?
Yes.
Well, welcome. And finally, we have joining us Denise Lindberg, who is a member of the Young Women's General Board. Welcome, Denise.
Thank you very much.
Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I was just newly called on January 29th to this position. So I'm just beginning to get my feet wet. This is my first participation and as a board member. And I'm a little apprehensive just to make sure that I can convey the thoughts that I've had. I am a mother of 2 sons who now have their own families and the grandmother of 11 grandchildren who are ranging in age from 18 months to 15 years. So I have both from seeing them in the primary and in their early years development as a grandmother, and now seeing how our children are raising their families. Having that perspective is really a sweet experience.
This is great. Well, I am thrilled, and I hope that those who are listening today are thrilled as well, are on the edge of their seats, just ready to be instructed. And so I know I'm ready, and maybe your apprehension is not my apprehension at all. I am so confident of what's going to take place today that I'm just excited. And so when we think about this context of friend or foe, sometimes that's a tricky experience. Sometimes those you think that are going to be your best friends turn out to be those that maybe pull you down, or sometimes the people you think might not be lifting you actually lift you well. I'm going to plunge off of this experience when we start to look at this friends, and I'm going to pull this from the For the Strength of the Youth pamphlet, where it starts off with a simple line: everyone needs good and true friends. And I thought, you know, isn't that the truth? As adults, we need them. As adolescents, as youth and children. So when we start to explore this friend experience, this can be a challenging experience. Denise?
Well, in a way, it's almost a false dichotomy because peers and peer relationships can be both.
That's right.
And so I think our challenge as parents and grandparents and just friends, leaders, community members, is to encourage the positive aspects of peer relationships and then helping our children and grandchildren move through the difficult times when those peer relationships aren't quite so helpful.
I'm so glad that you bring this up because this is an excellent point to keep in mind here is when we often talk about peer pressure, et cetera, we usually think of the negative aspect. You know, the pressure doesn't usually bring out this happy feeling for most of us. I'm under pressure. Oh, I'm so happy for you. That's not the way we look at it. But there is the influence, this peer influence, and I'm glad you bring this up. This is really an important aspect. Wynn?
Matthew, one of the things I think is really interesting about friends and children in general is they can teach each other things that adults cannot. So they're really essential to development. And the time they spend together negotiating, rulemaking, dealing with infractions is really highly important for them. In fact, it prepares them for adult relationships.
This is a really good point, and I'm glad you bring this one up as well because sometimes I don't know how other people feel, but as parents, sometimes my greatest desire is kind of the protection mode. I want to protect my family. I want to make sure that I don't have influences that are going to set us astray. I want them to be happy, et cetera. And so maybe it would be better if we go live in a cave for a little while. And that way I can control my environment, control every influence. But when what you're saying here is actually this is an important part of our development is to have that association outside of family, et cetera, not exclusive of, but...
Now, I know this will sound somewhat humorous, but Michael Gurian, who's a specialist on boys, written lots of books and articles. He refers to the kinds of interactions that sometimes boys and children and girls have with cousins and others. He calls it nurturing aggression. And essentially what he's saying is it's just enough to kind of toughen you up, to prepare you for kind of what's out there, but in a way that doesn't totally devastate you. So that term nurturing aggression, I think, is kind of interesting.
Let's explore this a little bit more. In what ways can parents nurture opportunities for developing positive peer experiences from a primary age? So we're looking at young children to young men and young women. What responsibilities do parents have? And in what ways can they nurture and help these relationships be appropriate? Sure.
Well, you know, I think it does start when they're very, very young. And parents don't realize, I think, that what they do and who they are speaks louder than what they say. Our example is probably the very best teacher that we have for our children. And as husband and wife develop this loving relationship with each other, their children are watching, and they're watching the interactions and the helpfulness between the two and how they solve problems, and they're learning from that.
This is excellent. As a matter of fact, in preparing for this week, I've been reading quite a bit of different things, and there are so many articles that address, please don't give me more of the do as I say and not as I do in the early stages. They're saying, give me a model here that is consistent. Bonnie?
I think parents, too, can help control the interaction, because that first interaction they have with their brothers and sisters sets a tone for how they're going to interact with their friends later on. And parents have a lot to say about respect in the home and treating one another with respect and valuing one another. And if they allow negative behaviors to go on in the home among siblings, I think they're going to take that outside. And vice versa, if there's a loving atmosphere in the home, that's what children learn. That's the way you treat people.
So if I understand correctly, then parents do have a responsibility to create or at least provide an atmosphere for things to flourish in the home.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then that's how they are going to interact with their friends when they go out into the world.
Okay.
And that's where they learn that there are bounds, that there are standards, that there are places we just don't go. And they learn self-restraint, and they learn how to treat others.
This is good. And I'm going to add to that one because as you were saying, I'm like, oh, yes, yes, yes. And then I was thinking also from President Gordon B. Hinckley, who once said, it's in the home where individuals learn to value values. So it's, we see the boundaries, but we also see elements of exposure to the things that are good, and we learn not just about do's and don'ts, but also how to value experiences. Wynn?
One of the things I think is just absolutely critical, and I really concur with what's been said about what parents do, how they behave is so critical. But I think one of the great things that we can do that would just sort of transform what happens to families is to make dinner time sacred. Sacred in the sense that this is something in our family that we do very regularly, and it's a time of conversation and actually making sense of who we are, what's happened, what's happening. It's just a great place to learn.
You know, there's some parents, and especially with younger families, that have communicated, emailed, or approached and said, well, I hear this about this dinner time experience, and I understand that it's important, but I'm nervous. Well, what if we just sit there and no one says anything? And so they ask the question, what do I do about that? Do I have to have an agenda, or should I write a few things down? Help me with this one. Because it's a real question, and I get that actually quite a bit.
You know, in our home, dinner time was a very special opportunity for us to sit down. And we talked about not just what we'd done that day. That's sort of the typical report. But my husband and I were both news junkies, and so we talk about the issues of the day.
Okay.
We talk about what was happening in the world. We talk about gospel topics. We talk about our feelings about particular issues. And so we tried to broaden our dinner time discussion, and we had some pretty active, conversations and discussions. Interestingly, one of our sons had certain political views that were more aligned with my husband. My other son had political views that were more aligned with mine. And we had some very interesting discussions. But as a result, I think our sons learned to know that we valued them. We valued their opinions. We wanted to hear their opinions.
This is good.
And we wanted them to also be tuned to what was going on in their environment, in their community, so that they could be good citizens.
I like how you were inviting their input in a very natural way. It wasn't an agenda-driven. And it kind of would unfold.
It did.
And around our table, we were not so lofty. We had seven children who were close in age, and it was chaotic at times, but I think it was a time for them to bond with one another and to talk about, what happened that day, or to tattle on, did you know what happened to this, brother or sister today? And it was a little more free fall, chaos. But I think it was an important time for us as a family to decompress kind of at the end of the day.
Well, we were just saying in our family, we were laughing, my wife and I, after a family dinner, and we were saying, what goes on under the table is probably just as important as what's going on above the table, meaning the kicking and the teasing and the little things that are going on, and as if we didn't know that was happening, and we just kind of laugh about it. But it's these intimate relationships that are forming in boundaries and opportunities to discover.
Well, and I was going to say, too, I've been in the homes of my children, and I wish I had done this better as a mother, as I watch them. But as they gather for their evening prayer before they go to bed, they'll just say, well, what was your happiest moment? What was your saddest moment of this day? Or who did you play with at recess? Or who did you eat lunch with? And they just gather information to kind of see where their children are heading and who they are playing with and how their relationships are working out there.
This is so good. So as we lay these foundations of family interaction, how does that relate then to peer experiences for our children? So they're in the safe element. So how does that transcend from home into peers? Wynn?
Let me share with you something. I mentioned that we were going to have this opportunity to talk about friends and foes. And I was speaking with my daughter, Marianne, and she has a ninth grader all the way down to a kindergartner, five children.
She's in the thick of everything.
Yes. And she has kind of a rambunctious daughter. I won't mention her by name. But anyway, she's about in fourth grade. And we know in fourth and fifth grade, we begin to have things emerge like cliques and what have you. And she said that this daughter of hers was sort of irritated by a friend. And Marianne took this opportunity to say, and this was kind of the instruction, we don't talk about people, we talk with people. That's a very simple...
Say more to that.
Well, instead of gossiping or talking about someone, if you have something that concerns you about somebody, it's far better to speak with them than to speak about them or to gossip about them.
Okay.
And one of the things that was so interesting, she's very alert and sensitive to things that are, you know, said to her. And she had occasion to, you know, she heard somebody else saying, talking about someone else. And she said, wait a minute. We talk with them. We don't talk about them. So something that simple, where it really translates into what's happening in their school or in their friendship circle.
That's good. And it worked out okay?
Worked out fine.
That's really good to hear. Well, I think that this is really fabulous. I like the element. And when you start to look at some of the observations, research, if you will, things that are taking place, it's interesting where they see the development of trust and experience within their home, which then hopefully will extrapolate into other friendships. And I like this experience here.
You know, another thing about dinner time is we talk a lot about the power of listening to others, to being in groups where we kind of brainstorm, what should we do? And I think dinner time is a time when you can engage in some informal problem solving, where you maybe raise an issue. And if you have older children, you have to say, well, what would you suggest? What might we consider? Because life is nothing but a series of interpersonal adventures.
Right.
And there are some people who are really difficult to get along with or to relate to. And what we do is we use the family to help us get ready for the missionary companion, the work associate, and others. But we do it in a way that makes sense. Developmentally, we're kind of on target. We're talking about things that really make sense for a certain age group.
Some of the research would say that one of the best things you can do with a little older children and going into the tweens and the teens is role play. And as soon as you say the word role play, it's for some people, it gets so awkward. It's kind of like, and I wish people could see Bonnie right now, is because she has one eyebrow cocked up saying, yeah, that is a little bit odd. And it can be very awkward. But when you were speaking, I was thinking, you know, dinner time actually is, whether we call it or not, role playing. In some ways, the way you're describing it, I think it's the essence of what we're saying here, is giving people opportunity to practice, to discover, to brainstorm ways to be able to handle circumstances. And so you might not say, okay, family, let's role play today this situation. But in many cases, when you're aware of circumstances and they start talking about it, then you have an older sibling or a younger sibling saying, well, man, that happened to me. What do you do about that? I mean, that's really giving this opportunity of arming them with practical experience and ideas.
Well, when you give the child the opportunity to address an issue, you are expressing trust in them and in their ability. That's going to build their self-image, their sense of self-worth. But more importantly, you are also giving them the opportunity to test out. And if we don't try to hurry up and jump in with solutions, but rather use this exploratory questions, you know, what do you think about that? You know, how else could we handle this issue? Asking open-ended questions that would allow the child to explore, we can elicit more conversation at the dinner table, but we can also give that child the opportunity and the assurance that he or she can, in fact, deal with issues as they come up in the world and as they're dealing with their peers.
Is this restrictive to age? I mean, can you be asking open-ended questions to very young children as well? I'm leading us on this one, obviously.
Well, I mean, I think that you have to gear it to the age of the child.
Nicely said.
I remember I used to tease my friends that you could give a child, would you like to wear the blue shirt or the green shirt? Well, obviously I'm controlling to a certain extent his decision-making there, but he was also feeling that he could make some decisions as to what he wanted to do. But I think sometimes we tend to control more than we need to. If we've been teaching children from early on about their worth, about the fact that they have a spark of divinity in them, about the fact that they have the ability to reason that is God-given and that they should use it, and that they have been taught values about what's right, what's wrong, I think that that empowers a child. And whether you're talking about a primary age child or a teenager, I think that that's positive for self-development.
This is very good. I'm thinking of Spencer W. Kimball, who was a president of the church years ago, but spoke so much about marriage and families. And I, whenever you read about things, it's like President Kimball said, you say, this was a man before his time, you know, and so relevant. But he said an interesting element. This might sound like it's a little disjointed here, but when you were speaking, I was thinking, this is so important. He said the most important word in the English language is the word remember. He says, remember is the word, remember is the program. And then he talked a little bit about that. Now, this might be a little bit the disjointed part here, but when you were speaking, I was thinking, you know, one of the good things about asking these questions, regardless of the age, is it helps me get out of my line of thinking as a parent and the way that I understand reason and make sense of the world. And sometimes just asking, let them speak so that I can say, oh, okay, so this is what it was like to be in kindergarten. I've kind of forgotten about that. I mean, I'll have to admit, sometimes when I have children who are in junior high school, for example, and they come home and the sky is falling and the world is over, and then I remember my parents saying lines like, you'll laugh about this in 10 years, and I'm thinking, I will not laugh. I will never laugh again. You don't understand how serious this problem is. I couldn't open my locker for the whole day. And I think what President Kimball is encouraging is in every situation is it's very helpful to remember what they're going through and the circumstances and the way that they're feeling and how they're making sense of it. And so I like this concept of asking questions and feeling. Where else can parents gather this information besides the dinner table?
I think the other thing that's powerful, and we've mentioned this so far, is that the power of listening. We know very clearly that unhurried listening with children of all ages is a a gift of great worth. And when we listen and really try to understand, then they get the message, oh, you really want to know what's happening to me.
This is probably not intuitive because I think most of us, especially with children, we start to hear challenges, worries, and concerns. At least for me, I better speak autobiographically here. I like to jump in and solve the problem really quickly. But when what you're saying here is so important, any tricks that you found successful is becoming better listeners and not jumping in?
I think that just watching and listening, as has been mentioned, we pick up so much just by watching the nonverbal cues. The slumped shoulders, for example, if they've had a bad day, or the bouncing in when they are excited about their day and how it's been. So if we're attuned to those nonverbal messages, because as the older the child gets, the more they get into those tween and teen years, it's going to be much harder to get them to initially come up and say, oh, boy, I've had a bummer of a day. They're not going to say that. But
good.
If you're listening,
how was your day? Good.
Yeah, exactly.
It might not really be good. This is a good point.
But if you're watching and you see that, and you know, you can then say, you know, you seem down today. Would it help to talk? They can take the cue, or they may choose not to. But at least you've let them know that you're there.
This is nice.
In the present.
That is so true. And you know, I had four boys and one daughter. And my daughter would just talk, and we would share, and just, oh, we could just go on forever. And my boys, it was, how was your day? Good. But I found that I could go down at night when they were getting ready to go to bed, you know, these teenage boys, and they'd love to have their back rubbed. And I said, I'll rub your back as long as you'll talk, and, you know, just ask questions. And they would just talk and tell about the day. I loved that. It was just the secret to getting into their hearts and into their minds.
See, this is what I like. I love the secret parts. You know, and sometimes the way that you listen better is you ask an additional question so that you stop talking to listen. Yeah. Or you put them in an environment where things spill out. Right. Take advantage of environments. For me personally, this is maybe too personal, but I probably receive more revelation in my car than anywhere else. You know, and then I'm thinking, well, wait a second. I probably learn more about my children in many cases when we're driving places in between experiences where they're starting to talk about their worries, where they're going, or then what happened when they're coming back, etc.
I think that's perfect. I think about the video that's done by Elder Hales where it shows the woman in the minivan and her daughters got the earphones in, and she has her take them off, and then you watch her hand. Her hand goes over. They touch each other, and then they have this vibrant conversation, but it's a little chunk of time. It's not a huge conversation, but it's enough to get things going and get the understanding coming.
I had a sister-in-law that that taught me that. She was just ahead of me in raising her children, and she told me the best time you'll have with your kids is driving them to. She said, "I don't like them to ride the bus. I like to drive them to and from school." I know it sounds a little counterproductive, but she said that was the best time of the day to talk to them when they went to school, and then to get that fresh as they're coming home from school.
As long as you keep the radio off.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Well, absolutely. You have to eliminate all the distractions,
yeah,
don't you?
Right. You have to pull the earbuds out or turn the radio off.
No, we didn't have that when my children were little. There weren't cell phones and all that. And working with them, you know, just working alongside with them. That's just those casual, spontaneous moments.
You know, in our family, we had on Saturdays, we all pitched in. We all cleaned house. We went out and worked in the yard. And then at the end of the day, we would have a little picnic in the living room, in the family room floor. And we'd spread out the tablecloth and we'd make homemade pizza and we'd sit around and talk. We'd play board games. There's a great opportunity to talk when you're playing a board game.
Oh, by far.
And then we would finish the day with having a happy folding party, which meant that all the freshly laundered laundry would be brought up, and we would sort it out and fold it up and put it away. But we talked. As we were doing all of that, we were talking. And it was, as I talk to my sons now, ask them about what memories they have, they talk about those happy folding parties and our picnics in the living room.
This is great. As a matter of fact, you're revealing some of our great secrets that our children brought up. Our older children say, "Oh, we can see what you are doing now after all these years. Is this wasn't so much about weeding the garden, you know, kind of. This wasn't so much about doing this. It was an opportunity where you guys were just talking to us." Actually, that is true. You know, as nice as the yard might look, it was much better of what was taking place as doing it together, because it really wasn't about the grass. It was
just
about the family.
One other idea, Matthew. As your children age, and then they have their own children, and you have hopefully these sort of regular events, if that's possible, where you have dinner. One of the things that tells you that things are going well is when the older children want to join the adults for the discussion at the table.
Well, this is a good point.
Because it's proof positive that they're saying, "What's taking place here? I want to hear. I want to participate. I want to know what's going on." And listening to these other aunts or uncles or close associates, they could be other people in your community, this is a place where they're going, "Oh, this is where I kind of get the lowdown on what it might mean to be an adult."
That's a great point. I remember when we'd have family get-togethers and, you know, you'd have the children's table and then the adults' table, and you could see that desire to move in and move into the adult table and participate. You know, when you have all the aunts and uncles and cousins, it does get pretty difficult. But when the child is now interested in being able to express himself and to be heard and feel that she wants to be a part of that conversation, that's a sign of maturity and of that something's going well in that home.
That's so nice. Well, thank you for your ideas. Sadly, we're out of time for this episode, but luckily we have another episode where we'll be talking about this, and I think that we'll also be able to address some specific issues of helping parents know how to deal with positive and negative experiences. But I can't tell you how grateful I am for what I've been learning. And if I were to step back from the aspect of how the gospel or how our Father in Heaven can help parents and children and youth, is I think of things that you have said of talking together, talking with one another, listening. I love the concept of observing and watching. And then there's something, I'm just going to use this term, it didn't really come up, but discerning. So as we combine all those, then we start to discern. When we do these things as parents and as individuals, then I believe, and it seems that this is the case, then the Spirit is able to step in and direct, maybe at times when we don't have anything else, any other ideas. But if we're doing those simple things, and sometimes we may not know quite what to do, but as we create these moments, set an environment, mentor, all these things that you've been saying, I'm thinking, these are so good. And then we listen and observe, then our Father in Heaven can assist in meaningful and powerful ways. So what great insights you've provided. Thank you so much. You have been listening to Gospel Solutions for Families on the Mormon Channel, brought to you by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.